Going to the gym can be discouraging, especially if you're putting in the work but barely seeing changes. But with Tonal, you can actually see your progress with every workout. Tonal provides the convenience of a full gym and the expertise of a personal trainer anytime at home with one sleek system. Designed to reduce your mental load, Tonal is the ultimate strength training system, helping you focus less on workout planning and more on getting results. No more second-guessing your technique. Tonal gives you real-time coaching cues to dial in your form and help you lift safely and effectively. After a quick assessment, Tonal sets the optimal weight for every move and adjusts in 1 pound increments as you get stronger, so you're always challenged. Tonal lets you choose from a variety of expert-led workouts, from strength to aero hit to yoga and mobility to keep you coming back for more. For a limited time, go to Tonal.com to get $500 off your Tonal purchase, plus a free 4-year warranty. That's Tonal.com for $500 off, plus a free 4-year warranty. Tonal.com.
All right, everybody. You are indeed listening to Jay Flemma Sports Report, and I am Jay Flemma of the Golf News Net, and we are really delighted to be here on iHeartRadio with you once again. All right, folks, we've got a terrific show lined up for you. We're not far from the Masters. We're already a couple of weeks into the LIV Tour, and the PGA Tour has been in full steam as we hurtle towards Augusta National. And to bring us up to date on everything, we're going to renew an old friendship. You might remember from back in the day when I wrote for Cyber Golf. Oh, those were my glory years. Well, my editor-in-chief there was none other than a direct descendant of Mary Shelley and Percy Bysshe Shelley. And he is keeping up the literary end of the family even now, hundreds of years later. All right, everybody, give a warm Jay Flemma Sports Report. Welcome to Jeff Shelley.
Hey, Jay, how's it going?
Well, it's always better when the old gang gets back together for a hoot. Jeff, tell us what you've been up to all these few years since Cyber Golf has said its final farewells.
Well, Cyber Golf's in a whole other form. The editorial model that I helped create, that went by the wayside in 2015. While we were going, I put up over 16,000 stories, probably wrote half of them, and I had tremendous freelancers like you and other people, probably about 80 freelancers around the world. And that was a blast. It was a really fun time for me. I must say, though, that I didn't take a day off for like 7 years because the internet's a real voracious beast, and pretty much whenever you put something up, you know, it's obsolete. So, you know that. But ever since then, I put out a book, The History of Seattle Sports. What the name of the title is, How Seattle Became a Big League Sports Town from George Wilson to Russell Wilson. It featured, I think we had 90 sports figures over the last century that were prominent here in Seattle, from football players, basketball players, golfers, swimmers. Helene Madison won a gold medal. There's a pool here in town named after her. Skiers on down the line, you know, baseball players. It was done by a good friend of mine, Dan Raley, who used to be a reporter for the Seattle PI here, Post Intelligencer.
Sure, Dan, the famous Seattle paper. Hey, who were some of the skiers?
Oh, my. I'd have to look. Debbie Armstrong. Remember her?
Oh, yeah. Go ahead. Yes.
The Mayer brothers.
Bill and Steve.
Yeah. Yep. They still live over in Yakima in the Ellsberg Canyon.
Oh, Yakima.
Yeah. And they, all three of those, they grew up skiing over White Pass, which is a real kind of casual.
Sure.
Not really upscale, but very friendly place. And my daughter goes over there on weekends, so it's not about, I'd say about 2 hours from here. Anyway, it was a fun book. And then if you want to buy one, I've got plenty left.
Well, I would send us a review copy, and I'll make sure that a bunch of them get right. Sold. Hey, what do you know about this mountain in Washington I hear holy whispers about called Mount Baker?
Mount Baker? Oh, that's That's one of the best snowboarding places, I think, in the world. They get, at one point in time, they had the highest ever snowfall. I can't remember. It's like 400 inches or 800 inches, some ridiculous. It's up north by the Canadian border outside of Bellingham. Mm-hmm. It's part of the Northern Cascades here in the state of Washington.
That's Tony Deere's neck of the woods.
That's right. That's right.
Tony Deere being another one of Cyber Golf's members of Cyber Golf's great pantheon of writers. And of course, I keep in daily touch with our friend Marino Paracenzo.
How's he doing?
You know Marino, he's doing fantastic, but he's still a Luddite. Okay, he finally got himself a cell phone. And he's constantly calling me all the time to teach him how to use it. Now, what can you tell me about this app store? I'm apparently supposed to download something from something called an app store. Almost as funny as how when he wants to be facetious about sports scores, he'll give you this one. He'll go, let's see, the Seattle's are losing to the Cincinnati's 14-7.
How old is he these days? He's got to be
91, 92, yeah. Going on 32, 33, yeah. Something like that. Maybe even 16, going on 17, knowing his spirit.
Yeah, he was great. I'm surprised that he actually had a computer to write up his stories on for me.
Barely. It's more like he what goes in and out is the computer line. Okay, that's what was always the big problem with poor Marino. And he still can't come on the Jay Flemma Sports Report because he doesn't have a computer that has a facial cam so yeah. That he can appear.
Well, I'm not quite as old as him, but I'm definitely an ink stain rich. And I go back to when I was in the Army, I was a military policeman. This is back in the early 70s, 71, 72 during the Vietnam era. And I didn't like the police duty there in Frankfurt. And I ended up typing up police reports for the commanding general, which is a great job because I didn't have to do any duty. I didn't have to go on these stupid midnight alert things. You know, I'd jump in their tank and go out into the countryside. I just locked my door because I had to get this report out to the commanding general every morning at 7 o'clock with his coffee and donuts, right?
Well, with your writing skills.
Yeah, it was great. You know, I learned a lot of, I had to type through 16 carbon copies.
Dude, you're Mickey Spillane.
we didn't have a Xerox machine or anything like that in those days.
Do they have a telex or something like Hunter Thompson used to use?
We used to have a telex, yeah. And my wife to this day can hear me typing throughout the whole house.
Oh, I'm like that too. But worse, I got a buddy, John Kulak. He really slams the key so loud that he gets yelled at by it. Throwing him a beat. We got to get him because he's going to play at Sleepy Hollow with me sometime. Anyway, getting back to brass tacks. So what else? You've got that great book out. And where can people find it? Is it on Amazon or do you have a website where people can get it?
You'll be able to find it on Amazon. Yeah. After Cyber Golf was done and I finished the book, I got a call from Sharon Wilson, the publisher of Golf Course Trades.
Yes, another fine magazine.
And so I started out doing, she wanted me to write about turf. And, superintendents are the lifeblood of any golf course.
But
I knew that the content that they had was more, soil samples, chemical usage, best practices stuff, which is all great. But at my age and at that point in time during my career, I didn't want to write about that. And I told her, I said, look, you got plenty of that stuff. You need to have another focus on different subjects to get more, give these guys
broader readership.
Yeah. And, give them a break from the, the nuts and bolts of their job, which they know so well. And so I wrote about my travels and I initiated my ignited my Making the Rounds column that I had when I was editor of Back Nine magazine out here in the late 1980s. And so that's basically what I've been writing is just continuing columns, making the round different installments. I think I'm up to number 26 now. Yeah. So anyway, that's what I've been doing. And I'm also, I'm in the midst of two and perhaps three golf club centennial books. One is
and
for,
which courses would those be?
They're both in the Seattle area. One is called Broadmoor Golf Club, and they're centennial.
Sure.
1924. And 1925 is Glendale's.
Mm-hmm. Yep. They're
both really interesting clubs. You know, next year, no, in 24, during the centennial year, Broadmoor is going to hold their sixth USGA championship. And so that's going to be a big deal. The USGA is going to come out here for the US Senior Women's Am, you know, and, but they've had, you know, they've had a PGA Tour here in the 1960s. One was won by Jack Nicklaus. Another one was won by Billy Casper. And the other one was won by Dave Marr. They've had Western amateurs here.
Sure.
You know, Pac-10 and Pac-12 championships out here, men and women.
Isn't it the Pac-27 now?
I think it's actually the 10. Because UCLA and USC are moving to the Big Ten, whatever. Big Ten is probably the Big 15 now. I don't know.
I think it's the Big 44.
Yeah, I don't like that shifting around. It's all money play. But, you know, I mean, USC and UCLA had, you know, with the University of Washington Huskies here. And, you know, they've been rivals for 100 years, literally. So it's kind of sad to see it all, you know, go
fall apart like that. Yeah. Speaking of things falling apart, the LIV Tour has not gotten off to a very good start this year. So give us your thoughts. Start us all the way back at the beginning from your first inklings of the LIV Tour and its protogenesis, and take us all the way through your analysis of what you've seen thus far and what you think the future holds for it.
Well, I wrote about it my last Making the Rounds column. And it's just, you know, the whole idea that it's good for golf, it just doesn't add up. To me, it's, how should I put this without sounding too snotty? I just, you know, like to quote Gertrude Stein, there, I find there's no there in the sense that, you know, they have a golf tournament, it's 54 holes, team competition, shotgun start, loud music, you know, the kind of good old boy kind of approach to golf. But, you know, how can they say that they can compete with the PGA Tour other than just by offering these guys stupid amounts of money? You know, I think most of the players have come out saying that's good for golf, blah, blah, blah. I think the only guy that's been honest has been Pat Perez, who went to the press conference meet and greet there for the first tournament in Portland, wearing a shirt with dollar bills all over it. You know, I find the best word that I can come up with is the whole thing. Whole thing seems venal. Everybody's
contrived.
And everybody's bribable, you know, and it's just too bad, you know. I think maybe I'm hoping that ultimately it's going to, you know.
The Saudis will realize they're not getting the bang for their buck that they wanted and pull the plug.
Yeah, you know, at some point in time, they're losing money. And you know, they've already spent, at the point of this writing, which is a couple months ago, they gave $784 million to lure the players. You know, the private clubs are not allowing them. You know, they don't have some of the private clubs have actually banned some of the LIV tours from their premises, you know, including, I think the
Seminole
and Jimmy Dunn, who's a fantastic guy, you know, a huge supporter of golf, and the president of Seminole, and, you know, Dustin Johnson was his member, or is a guest at the prestigious pro member last year, and he disinvited him mainly because of Dunn's experiences as the you know, the main partner there at Piper Sandler O'Neill, which is now called Piper Sandler, when one third of his employees were killed in the September 11 terrorist attacks. So the, and you know, the,
can't blame him.
Yeah, no, it's personal, you know. It's just, I don't know, they're just glossing over so much, you know. It's a sports washing thing and things like that. And I think that's kind of, you know, the golf fans' general perspective on it too. I mean, it's cool that you can go to a pro tournament and pay $10 to get in or whatever, the you know, whatever, and the beers are cheap, and you know, and it's a fun. I had a friend who went down to Portland watching down there at Pumpkin Ridge. Yeah, and she says you had a good time, you know, but they could walk anywhere. You know, I mean, it's not, you're not battling 30,000 people or 35,000 at a regular tournament.
55 in a major.
Yeah, you know, it's, but, you know, I noticed today I saw that the viewership it's broadcast on the CW.
Whatever, record lows.
Whatever that is. Yeah, they had for Sunday's final round from Gallery, they had 274,000 viewers. And after an average of 284,000 for the second round. So, you know, people probably checked in and took a look at what would happen in the second round. And she said, no, I'm not going to go back and watch that. Yeah, I don't know. Maybe the weather was better or something. I don't know. You know, I have a kind of a general distaste for it. You know, it seems kind of a, it's a pseudo tour, and it's certainly, I don't think it's good for golf in the sense that it monetizes everything to a ridiculous level that those of us who play the game can never find in our own lives. It's just like, I don't know. They're buying the game. How's that sound?
Well, it sounds about right. You know, the problem is that Mohammed bin Salman's net worth places him somewhere 17th or 18th on the list of world nation gross national products.
Right.
So he's got money to burn, as they say. So do you anticipate any of the LIV players to be sharp enough to compete at the Masters this year from what you've seen of their play thus far?
Well, yeah, possibly, you know. I'm kind of, it's going to be interesting. It's probably going to be one of the most interesting Masters or majors for that matter in years, just for that standpoint. So they have brought a little buzz to the Augusta National. You know, that's for sure.
Well, yeah, but there's a right kind of buzz and a wrong kind of buzz. This is the kind of buzz you get when your husband shows up for church wearing a wife beater.
I know. It's adding a definite element, you know. I don't know, what have you heard from your listeners? Anything?
Well, you know, the question becomes one of, they only play 54 holes. Right. You know, there isn't that coming down the stretch with the other guy breathing down your neck.
Right.
You know, so will they in the 72nd, you know, 70th, 70% 72nd holes have the stamina, have the endurance? Right. Well, they'll say, what the LIV guys will say is that we're going to be better conditioned because we'll be more rested because we only play 54 holes. Right. And it gives us an extra day of either practice or sleep. Right. You know, we'll have to see how it plays out. Personally, I'm not sure their edge will be quite as sharp. You know, there might be, with all that money in their pocket, there also might be 20 pounds more of indifference packed around their haunches. Or 20 pounds of more laziness packed in their brain, or a combination thereof. Right. We'll have to see, you know. But the, you know, Brooks Koepka still has unfinished business. He's never won a green jacket, even though he's got four majors.
Right.
You know, and I'm sure Dustin Johnson will be elbowing, going, yeah, but you haven't won at Augusta. Yeah, but you haven't won at Augusta. It matters where you win, and I won at Augusta. You won at Erin Hills.
Right. So, yeah, you know, I mean, you know, are they going to have that sharpness that the regular tour players have, in a sense of, you know, their week to week, there's no week to week accountability, is what I understand, is that they're more interested in the results of the team than they are themselves. you know, yeah, they're I think that's going to change. That's the way the thing is going to change. It's going to be more toward team orientation versus individual. You know, sure, the guys that are women are making huge paydays, but you know, the competitiveness, the excitement, the tension, the tragedy, the career legacies associated with every other pro tournament, when only one champion is crowned, you know, that's not existent there. Let's face it. You know, there
it's anticlimactic when you don't even know what hole he's going to finish on. He could be out in the middle of the golf course.
Yeah. It's a shotgun start. They're going on both sides. You know, I don't know. I just, it baffles me that some of the backers think that it's the greatest thing since sliced bread. You know, it all goes back to Norman, you know, trying to do the same thing, but 10 years ago. Yeah. You know, he has issues with he's always had issues with the PGA Tour, and, you know, the scuttlebutt that he might be on his way out. You know, I don't know. Cause he's kind of managed to
alienate a great deal of people.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And so, tarnish what little legacy he had.
Yep.
You're listening to Jay Flemmis Sports Report. We're talking with Jeff Shelley, one of the greatest golf writers, golf editors, and golf publishers in the game. This is Jay Flemmis Sports Report on iHeartRadio and Golf News Net. We will be right back after this. All right, we're back. I'm Jay Flemma. You're listening to Jay Flemma Sports Report on Golf News Net and iHeartRadio. And we're here with Jeff Shelley, one of golf's greatest publishers, greatest writers, and greatest editors, and one of the finest minds in the game, and a super nice guy, too. So, Jeff, welcome back. So, right now, we're going to do a little rapid fire going through the other sports and pop culture section. Skiing. Yes, I know all of you in the north are still happy about winter storm, whoever it was, dumping a good 2 to 2.5 feet all over New England. And I'm here to tell you that it really was fantastic. Jay Peak in the northernmost stretches of northeastern Vermont was absolute heaven. Beg, borrow, or steal your buddy's Indy Pass to get on up there and get one more shot at the face shoots before the season ends. I'm hearing excellent news out of Attitash and Wildcat that the new improvements on their lifts have got people really enjoying the season at both places. Early on, there was some concern about Wildcat, but apparently they've got all systems go now. And that new Summit chair at Attitash that replaced that infernal, horrid, clankety-clank thing is the toast of North Conway, New Hampshire. Switching over to chess, fantastic. We've got ourselves another imbroglio, a terrible, terrible blow to the chess world. Alejandro Ramirez, the very well-respected young broadcaster and Costa Rican and American grandmaster, the youngest ever to attain the title at age 15, and a coach of several American teams, stands accused of sexual misconduct by no less than 8 women, 3 of whom were underage. This is a developing story, but we are going to have not only updates on this, but we're going to have an article that will reference the thoughts of national champion Fabiano Caruana, and of course, the great American champion Hikaru Nakamura, both of whom have terrific podcasts and have been talking a lot about it. But a dark day for journalists and sports journalists everywhere, and especially for the U.S. chess team. Finally, we are going to get back to the Masters. But Jeff, you don't play chess, do you, by any chance?
I used to. The reason was I grew up in Vancouver, Washington, which is across the Columbia River from Portland. And they had a community chess club that was outside in a park, and there was this beautiful 16-year-old. I went there and she was my chess teacher. I showed up religiously. Wow. I think I was 8, 9 years old.
Well, did she teach you openings?
Yeah. No. Let's just say that I had the hots for her. You know.
So you cared less about the Ruy Lopez and the Jaco Piano and the Sicilian more than you did. Okay.
I actually know the basics, you know. But yeah, there's a lot of intrigue. Go ahead.
And are you much of a skier?
I used to be. When I lived in Montana, yeah, I lived in Billings, Montana when I got out of the Army, and the nearest hill was Red Lodge.
Have you ever been? Sure, Red Lodge.
Yeah. So I worked, I was going to the school, going to college in the GI Bill, working at the post office, and I had Mondays and Tuesdays off, and I go up to Red Lodge, and the ski rate that on Mondays was $8 all day. So I'd go up to the top, go down to the bottom, go up to the top. I never had, there was never a ski line or line, you know, in the ladder, the lift line. It was great. Had some funny stories there. I brought my buddy Art Coelho, who was 6'4" and 240 pounds. He was a novelist, and he was an honorary member of the Crow Indian tribe there. And his Indian name was Seven Buffaloes. Anyway, we go up there, and I told Art, I said, whatever you do, he'd never skied before in his life. He's from Salinas Valley in California. Whatever you do, Art, please don't fall when you get off the lift. Of course, he falls. He can't get up. And all the subsequent skiers saw this man mountain there and fell over him. Anyway, he got him up and going. But he wore a size 15 shoe or something like that. And the biggest one they had was a size 12.
He's
a gamer. You know, he shoved his giant feet into those things. And it was really cool because they had these little, it was pretty gentle slopes that I took him on. And they had these really cool areas that went through, you know, trees and stuff like that, you know, and
glades.
Yeah. And, just kind of side routes. And I lost him for a little bit, and I yelled out. I said, Art, where are you? He said, I'm over here. I feel like Yul Gibbons. I ate a pine tree. You remember Yul Gibbons?
No, who's Yul Gibbons? I remember Yul Brynner, but I don't remember Yul Gibbons.
Yul Gibbons, he was a naturalist, I think, and he was a shill for grape nuts flakes or something like that. Anyway, he could barely walk the next day with those undersized ski boots. It was $8, but I come out to Seattle and in Washington State where I grew up, and I just got out of it, you know. Anyway,
well, you'll have to at least come on the expedition to Mount Baker when my friend Jamie Enright takes me up there. So maybe you can carry my broken body back. Give the news to all the cousins. So anyway, so the Masters is imminent and upon us. Give us your thoughts on what you've seen thus far on the PGA Tour season and who you think is going to be a factor.
Oh boy, there's a lot of new names that got in that are in these tournaments now, right? Probably because of the live draining away some of the regulars.
The live players will be permitted to come and play if they qualify. Well, and we'll see the former champions. We'll see Reed. We'll see Immelman. We'll see all of the fellows that have qualified through the various means.
All right. Is Mickelson going to show up, do you think?
I would anticipate that he will show up. Yeah. I don't think he'll make himself all that visible, though.
Right.
He is not a welcome sight in media tents. I got a good look at him at the U.S. Open, and he took it rough. Okay, they were merciless on him, and I don't think he really wants to spend too much time in any sort of interview.
Yeah. Yeah.
Especially if he sees our friend Christine Brennan.
Is that right? She gonna
Christine
play?
Has been leading the charge, especially for the families of the 9/11 victims. Yeah. She has been on top of the story, and she's done a terrific job of laying out a lot of the evils of Mohammed bin Salman.
Uh-huh.
So,
well,
But I would think the rest of the tournament would be focused on the golf and on the players. So my early money is on Scottie Scheffler. Why don't you give us your thoughts on, will we finally see the first repeat since 05-06?
Who knows? He's playing great, you know, and he's got understanding. He's got his menu dialed in there with the, you know, with the sliders and things like that. And, you know, I think, yeah, why not? He's that good. I mean, he certainly is in great shape now, you know. John Rahm, I mean, you got to worry about him all the time. Max Homa.
Tell us a little bit more about Max Homa for those of our listeners that might not be as familiar as him.
He's a real regular dude. I mean, he plays, he grew up there in the Bay Area, and he plays a par three course there with his caddy. They go there, you know, pretty much every year or several times a year. He's just a chill, regular dude. You know, he's no pretenses whatsoever. What you see is what you got, what you get. And I think he's great for the game. You know, I think the same thing goes for, you know, the people that stayed on the PGA Tour. They're all straight shooters. They understand what their legacies are, you know, how they want to be known as.
How about Rory? What are your thoughts on what Rory's chances might look like?
I don't want to mess it up for him. I mean, I'd love to see him win. I'd give him the career slam, right?
That sounds like me. Every time I write a guy, he goes and spits the bit the next day.
Exactly.
He's been streaked for a while. I thought for sure Colin Morikawa was going to run away and hide at the PGA and then again at the U.S. Open, and he spit the bait both times.
Yeah. No, I think that's a good, you know, any of those guys. You know, Justin Rose is in good form. Matt Fitzpatrick, you know, Xander Schauffele. You know, it's going to be a really interesting tournament. I think that it's going
to
be
waiting for the Xander Schauffele breakthrough to occur in a major. Yeah. He's been banging on the door for years now.
You know, it's going to be interesting to see how they play the 13th hole. You know, they added a bunch of yardage now. You can't sling a 3-wood around the corner there. You know, they're going to have to sling. It's pretty hard to. I noticed that.
I hear they moved the tee box to Decatur.
Yeah, well, it's right on the edge of the property. They took it all the way to the property. They lengthened it by 35 yards. So, you know, that was those guys were hitting with a good drive. They were hitting 6 irons in. It's still not an easy hole because you got to carry the water. And then if you go too hard, you know, you're deep doo-doo back behind it. But
And it bends real hard in an awkward place. For amateur players, it's not easy at all.
No, it's not. He's got the pros that I've seen over the years. They're really good at drawing the ball, and that fits their eye. That kind of a hole fits their eye much better than, you know, guys that hit it the other way, faders. It's not my buddy said, "Well, I hit a fade." I said, "That's a power." I said, "That's a power fade." They said, "No, it's just a fade." So anyway, it's going to be interesting. It's going to be really interesting, the dynamic, I think, between the LIV guys and the regular tour players. I think it's going to be very interesting.
Switching gears for a minute, what's the latest you've heard on Tiger Woods' battles with his ex and the fight over their non-disclosure agreement and the possibility that we may hear more dirty laundry?
Frankly, Jay, I don't get into that stuff. You know, I think that it sounds like what I've read briefly is that, you know, she's got kind of a weak case, you know, and if she signs an NDA, you know, what can you do? Right. I'm sure that Tiger.
There's ways to break them.
Oh, yeah?
If they're not drafted properly, if you've got a crafty lawyer, if you've got both.
I'd like to think that Tiger Woods has pretty good lawyers. You know, that would protect him.
Well, we all remember the story of what happened, the cautionary tale of one Mark Lee. Okay, a fella at Manette Phelps and Phillips, Mark Lee, used to come to give lectures about copyright. When they would introduce him as Tiger's lawyer, he would always say, anybody that wants to hire Tiger Woods to do anything, bring your checkbook.
Yeah.
And one day he took on a client that was too big for him. He took on the Franklin Mint on behalf of the estate of Diana Spencer, or Princess Di.
Oh, yeah.
Oh. There was a trademark beef when the Franklin Mint started making Lady Di.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Lady Di commemorative plates. Well, he gave a series of interviews that ultimately got he and his law firm sued and sued successfully for the first time in American history for malicious prosecution.
Ooh.
Malicious civil prosecution. The judgment was for $400 million.
Jeez.
Yeah. That was spread between every partner at Manette Phelps and Phillips.
You could start a brand new golf tour with that.
Yeah, well, you could buy an awful lot of players for that. So you never know. It's a difficult job. I know personally, I am a lawyer.
I know.
It's a jealous mistress and a difficult job. But so before we let you go, by the way, everyone, we're talking with Jeff Shelley, one of the great minds in golf, great writer, great publisher, great editor. Great to have him on the Jay's Play Show on iHeartRadio and Golf News Net. What's the latest on Chambers Bay? I want to go back for another U.S. Open.
Yeah. Well, they finally changed the turf over to the natural poiana that you have out here in the Northwest, which they should have done a long time ago. My question is, they built those greens. There's you've been there, you played it, you know.
Love it.
The greens are so, you know, not severe, but there are a lot of humps and bumps and tears, and you know, I'm curious to see they really got to ramp back the POA, because they can put POA at like 12, 13 on the stimp meter, but there you wouldn't be able to keep the ball on a green. So,
well, two words come to mind: winged foot. Yeah. Okay, I'm sick and tired of modern new courses getting smacked down for the same things that we praise the old courses for.
Right.
Okay. And to the contrary, okay, you go to a place like Pinehurst in 2014, which, you know, they tried to make it look like it was 100 years old, and you had a puff of dirt come up every time you swung an iron. Yeah. You know,
that's kind of the problem.
But anyway, what do you hear? Any chance that, you know, what big tournaments is Chambers Bay hosting? And is there any chance that we'll see another Open there?
I think the Open isn't probably not going to happen until the mid-30s, if in the earliest. You know, the
schedule's out for a great many years in a row, yes.
Right. Number two guy at the USGA, John Bodenhammer, I know really well. He has, you know, he's from Tacoma, which is right there at Chambers Bay. And he's been a huge proponent of that facility ever since it opened. And that's how he had a lot to do with them and in the fact that, the county executive.
While you're discussing those people, I'd just like to let you know, we have another guest on the show. It seems that a white and gray cat has walked into the picture. So will you please have us find out his name so the crowd can give him a warm Jay Flemma Sports Report welcome? Who's the little gray and white kitty cat?
Mine?
Yeah, the one that was just, look over your left shoulder.
I thought you were talking about shoulder. No, it's a Finder. Her name's Finder.
Well, we just had a cameo appearance by Finer the cat.
Well, it's 5 o'clock out here, and she's ready to eat. So she starts digging her fork. She hasn't quite got the concept of daylight savings time changes.
Cats don't quite get the concept of radio shows, podcasts, or articles do.
No. Well, I think we had Waldo when you were out here.
Yes, you did. Yeah. A wonderful cat. You also had those two haunted pictures, okay? I still remember the thunderstorm in the middle of the night, and when I got up, the eyes of Percy Bysshe Shelley and Mary Shelley followed me across the room. They flickered red in the thunder and lightning.
I told you those weren't my descendants. Those were Annie's descendants, my wife's descendants. They were.
The Macy's
from New York. So
before we let you go, what can we look for in the future, and where can people keep up with all of your writing?
Well, you can go on, you can see my column online at golfcoursetrades.com/.
Yes, great place.
/ Jeff Shelley. You can kind of get a feel for I write about a whole bunch of different things. You know, some of the new things that are going on, some of the old things. The predominant audience is superintendents. So, you know, a recent installment was talking about all the things that irritates superintendents.
Yeah, but your column happily is a broader in space and concept as well. So it's accessible to all golf fans.
Yeah, you know, I don't. You know, and I can write about anything. You know, I'm writing about goats. You know, being used to trim, come in there and take care of blackberries or you know stuff like that. I can write about anything. You know, there's a new links course that's going to be designed by Dave McClay Kidd out here on the Washington coast, which believe it or not does not have a links course on it. That's interesting.
Fantastic.
Westport. You know, I can write about anything. I wrote about my experiences playing golf in Africa and New Zealand, Australia. I remember I don't know if I put this in the book, but you might get a kick out of it. I was playing this course called Yarra Yarra, which is down the road from Royal Melbourne.
Oh, Yarra Yarra.
And they had the birds in Australia are the most incredible in the world. And there was this bird above the fairway, these birds above the fairway, and their scream was, "You suck! You suck!" So whenever you get ready to hit a ball, you hear this bird go, "You suck! You suck!" You know, I just have a good time. You know, I try to have fun with what I write. And, you know, on the other hand, I also, you know, I kind of give it a little perspective after being a golf writer for 35 years and things.
Now I know what joke to play on you when we're playing together next. Everybody, give a big thank you to Jeff Shelley. It's been a terrific Jay Flemmis Sports Report, and we will be back next week with another installment. Jeff, we will catch up with you later in the year, I hope.
Yeah, sounds great, Jay. Thanks for having me on.
No problem. Thanks again, everybody. Catch you next time.